Hello, this is Ricky here from Guadalajara, Jalisco, Mexico, and you're watching Teacher Learning Cast with Peter Herrera and Benjamin Stewart. So there you go.
Teacher Learning Cast, episode number 14. Today is June 9th, 2018. My name is Benjamin Stewart from beautiful Aguascalientes. Today, my partner in crime, Petey Herrera, is not here currently, but he will be here shortly. In the meantime, I'd like to provide a few announcements. And the first being in MexTESOL International Conference, the 45th International Conference, in fact, is scheduled for this year, October 25th. Through the 28th, 2018, in Puerto Vallarta, Jalisco. Also, the ANUPI 16th International Conference for English Teachers, the Internationalization and Digital Learning Perspectives and Challenges in ELT is going to be on October 18th, 18th through the 21st, 2018, and in beautiful Huatulco, Mexico. So if you happen to be interested in attending some of those, that would be great. I think we'll be trying to attend one of those this year and look forward to that. If you are just joining us, feel free to leave comments. This is a basically open forum for all teachers to share their experiences and opinions, all things related to education. Biddy and I are specifically teaching in a BA program in ELT, English Language Training. So most of our topics are geared towards English language learning, but we also address a lot of topics that are more open to general education as well. So feel free to leave comments, whether you're joining us in a live broadcast or if you are joining us or just watching the recording. Feel free to give us some input, let us know what you like, your opinions about different topics. And if you'd ever like to join us during a live broadcast, feel free to do that as well. We're always looking for guests to join our broadcast. And we've had some great interviews in the past, discussions in the past with both teachers in training and service teachers, as well as pre-service teachers. We'll be starting here officially in just a few minutes. But today's topic, one of the topics that I wanted to discuss relates to output-driven the output-driven hypothesis, and we'll be getting into that here in just a few minutes. We're just starting, actually concluding classes this week, and so students are preparing for final exams. And the month of June is usually really crazy around this time of year. But this month, we're going to continue trying to broadcast every Saturday. So really leave us comments in the in Facebook. You can join us in Facebook by just searching Teacher Learning Cast, and you should be able to find the web page there. And you can also reach me at benjaminlstewart.com.wordpress.com. You can contact Petey at homers2000.wixsite.com/PeteyHA. So feel free to reach out to us either via Facebook, or you can send us correspondence through our personal web pages. Guess we'll go ahead and get started here. And I want to go ahead and share my screen. The first topic I wanted to talk about, in fact, when I was going through some of my readings this week, trying to come up with some topics to discuss, this was the first blog post that I came across that I wanted to share with you this week. And the title of this post is Helping Students See the Point of Writing. And one of the main points of this post was really trying to incorporate writing more into the general English learning classroom. And I think this is one of the main points I wanted to come share with you is, what kind of emphasis do we place on writing? Now, it could be academic writing, could be business writing, could be creative writing, if it's in the case of maybe poetry. It doesn't always necessarily mean just academic writing. What kind of writing do we place in our English language learning context? It says, I honestly don't feel that I have had a lot of options and I decided to be innovative. To me, this was the only option. I was definitely going to make my students create a newspaper and write an editorial on a collaborative Google Doc. And the point of this particular article was how the writer tried to incorporate the creation of a newspaper, really trying to find that one performance task where students could rally around and work collaboratively and cooperatively to create a product that was a collective effort. And I think the key point here is to try to find that those key activities where students can come together. Of course, using Google Docs is a really good way of doing that because it has that collaborative effort where you can, I think, have up to 50 people or students collaborating at any one time. So it really lends itself well to working together, have students come together and create this product, in this case, a newspaper. And one of the things I wanted to kind of ask the community here is what effort, what kind of focus do you place on writing in your own classroom with your students? And are there certain activities that you can create and have your students work together? Or maybe you've done this in the past and you could share that with us. But how do you create those activities where students come together? Now, maybe technology is going to be an issue here. So the question is going to be also, what kind of access do your students have to maybe create a Google Docs? And, you know, maybe the issue is that there's not a lot of technology in the schools, and maybe technology might be more available outside of the class, perhaps either in their homes or some other, maybe a internet cafe or some sort. Maybe they don't have access at all to any type of technology. So the question is going to be, well, how can this way of working collaboratively together, how can this be part of the English language learning experience without technology? And so whether you have technology available or not, what kind of activities can you bring together that would foster the promotion of writing in any of the senses? Like if it's, again, academic types of writing or just business type, or maybe just personal, maybe social types of correspondence. It might even be writing assignments that relate to how they interact online, maybe even in Facebook. You know, and again, if they are not having a lot of access to technology, it's going to be more like trying to find where they're at, how they communicate, and how you want them to learn how to communicate, but through writing. After reading this particular blog post, I came across this article here, Exploring Construction of College English Writing Courses from the Perspective of the Output-Driven Hypothesis. And I found this article interesting. The main thesis here is that reading to writing activities based on the output-driven hypothesis, which we'll talk about here in a few minutes, helps students consolidate and internalize linguistic and stylistic knowledge acquired in reading. And the first thing they mention, they really talk about three different hypotheses, the first being the input hypothesis from Krashen. And there's been a lot of talk about this hypothesis, and I see it all the time. A lot of educators, a lot of English language teachers subscribe to Krashen's input hypothesis. The idea of comprehensible input, the I+1, teaching slightly beyond the current level of the learner. And it's basically this idea of focusing on input before output. And it comes from this idea of acquiring L1, where the notion is that we typically receive a lot of input before we produce any output. And I would personally argue that I don't necessarily subscribe to the input hypothesis, in the sense that even as a baby, you know, we can, you know, there's been a lot of research on baby talk. And I feel that even from day one, you know, babies are communicating, whether, you know, whether it's being understood or not is another matter, but they externalize, they're crying, they're trying to communicate with someone else from the very beginning. And yes, they're constantly receiving a lot of input, whether they understand it or not. But the idea is to try to transfer that idea to the L2 context, learning an additional language where a person has already acquired one language is now trying to acquire a second language, I think is a stretch, to put it one way. I'm trying to imagine, even in the classroom, where in the input hypothesis, the idea is that the students are going to spend a whole semester, 16 weeks, just focusing on input. I don't think it's realistic, and I don't even necessarily think it's beneficial. So I think the input hypothesis has some credibility in the sense of the comprehensible input notion. I think the I plus one, teaching slightly beyond the notion of the learner, is, I think, almost a given. I think, you know, most of our classroom context, we can see where students most of the time are only understanding a percentage, a smaller percentage of what's being said. And I think I think most teachers can intuitively see that if students are understanding 100% of what's being said in the classroom, that the adjustments would quickly be made. So I think the norm is the I plus one in most cases. Yeah, so the author moves from the input hypothesis to the output hypothesis, coming from Swain. So 10 years later, in the mid-90s, Swain is talking about the output, where the output is more important than the input, even from the very beginning, even from a lower level of development. It says that out of the language raises learners' awareness of their linguistic difficulties in the second language development. So it's really looking at how students are finding, they're kind of becoming aware as they're creating this output of where they need to be, where they would want to be as a language user versus their current level. And it's bringing together this idea of a hypothesis testing. The output facilitates learners' hypothesis testing, right? So that this awareness or this meta-awareness is really more easily obtained as students are trying to create their language. And, you know, I can certainly relate to that. I think most of us can relate to this as L2 learners, that we kind of recognize, now whether or not we know the specifics of the language, but we know that we're making mistakes and that we're not speaking in the best way, right, or the most ideal way. So this idea of Swain is really to focus, change, to shift from the input and focus more on the output as a way of learning and improving one's speech. Now, the third point here is where the author is really leading up to, and it's this idea of output-driven hypothesis, where the idea, there's basically three assumptions. The first assumption is that output has greater driving force in learners' development of foreign language abilities than input, right? So it's the output is really the driving force. It's the reason, it's the purpose reading or listening to anything. And we haven't really spoken about this video specifically, but I think it really underlines much of what we talk about when we speak about performance tasks and really trying to design as an assessment tool these products or processes beforehand, so that students are really leading up to those experiences. I think it's kind of embedded into this output-driven hypothesis here. The second point they make here in the article is that it's more significant to develop students' productive skills, that is speaking and writing and maybe even translating, than it is to cultivate their receptive skills like reading and listening. So that's a very important aspect or assumption of this hypothesis. And the last one being the output-oriented integrating teaching method, right? So they compare this to the traditional ways of maybe looking at teaching individual skills or skills individually, whereas you kind of integrate the four skills as a teaching method. And I think this is another interesting aspect that might cause us to reflect on our own teaching, like what kind of, you know, what kind of approaches do we take in our classroom in terms of skills? Do we treat skills individually and we spend 1 or 2 days on listening and 1 day on reading and another day on speaking? Or do we try to bring those four skills together along with grammar and vocabulary and pronunciation, and we bring those together on a daily basis? And so where we're not really isolating the skills, but we're really trying to bring together and lead towards this output to a degree, whether it's small periods of output, right? Because I could certainly see, you know, types of activities where over the course of the week, there are certain types of output that's being had from the students, and then leading up to more of a complex type of output towards the end of the week or at the end of the unit. But I find it interesting in this article, and again, I found this article in Eric, I think it's, in fact, let me pull it up here, the exact website, eric.ed.gov. Okay, so this is an open database from the United States government, and you can find a lot of articles there. And I found this article there, so if you're interested, you can find it there. But I like how this article really links the input hypothesis, compares it to the output hypothesis, and then leads up to this output-driven hypothesis, because I think that this is really in line with the initial question I had this week, which is, how can we incorporate writing into the classroom? And I don't necessarily mean writing as a focus only on writing, but I have a feeling that writing might be neglected in some context in the general English classroom for various reasons. And I think we could come up with an easy list of reasons why that is. But I'm curious how others feel about this idea of bringing in writing, and regardless if it's academic writing, it could be business writing, could be creative writing, it could even be writing based on, you know, how students are interacting in social media. If they're writing, you know, even in short blog posts to each other, or even short correspondence through social media. But to not neglect writing, but to look at it as a reason to focus on the rest of the skills, the reading skills, of course, the listening skills, even the speaking skills, and just again finding ways to bring in all of the skill development through these types of activities, with the idea that it's all based on output. So Pitty, I don't know what you have seen in some of your tutorial sessions or your own experiences with teacher trainers, but this idea of writing, do we have activities? Do we have experiences with teacher trainers that bring in all four skills and especially writing? And if so, what does that look like?
I would there, Ben, and hello everybody. Sorry for being a little bit late, but I'm here. I guess, Ben, I would dare to say that especially in many, many places here in Mexico, I really wouldn't know about other parts in the world, but at least here in Mexico, and the experience I had and people I've talked to, and the kind of educational system we had led us to matching an input approach, in which everything is mostly based on, well, I think we have mentioned this before, the ability of the teacher to understand the topic and present a topic as a source of information. And that leads totally to an input approach in which sometimes the teachers don't even care about a context and just put out the information, and with a good hope that the students would be able to match that information with the real opportunities when they actually face them. And many, many times we even leave students with the responsibility of understanding at the moment of the real need of the use of the language, that that's the moment when they're going to use something that was exposed or presented by the teacher. So
I'm wondering, I'm sorry, Pete, I wanted to ask, because you mentioned something really interesting, and I have a question here. I mean, can you have context based on an input-driven classroom? If you're focusing more on input, is it possible to even create a context?
I think you can have a context there, the idea would be the delivery, that the teacher may not be just enforcing a context, but giving students format mm-hmm. in a context that the teacher is having in his mind, according to what the teacher believes and what the teacher wrote or prepared for the class, and being just a parallel information to the linguistic aspect. We have the language itself, and we would have the context, but presented just as information presented to students. I think that may also work like that. Me bringing the context out is that the idea would be not just to bring the context and put the information there about, let's say, health, or going to the doctor and presenting a conversation or something that the teacher actually presents, but creating a situation as a contextualization for students to actually create their own language and their own opportunities within the context. So it would be like, yes, the idea from the teacher is to present the context, but just to put the cards on the table and have the students play with them and bring their own cards to the table.
Yeah.
I made myself clear in that sense.
Yeah. And I think that you said something there that when the students create the language, for me, that's when the context is created. I mean, I think that teachers, they can present, if you want to say present a context, okay?
Right.
But I think the idea about the word context and what that means and what it really, mm-hmm. you know, for me, what it means in a very practical sense,
right,
means that it occurs when students create something, and it goes back to the output driven hypothesis.
Yeah, I would agree on that. Totally on that.
If we're focusing more on the input, I think that we're missing something. We're not giving students the chance here, because again, this is, I don't know if you caught really the earlier part of what I was talking about with regard to input hypothesis, but I think that's one of the shortcomings. You know, there are a lot of people, I see this online all over, people are really subscribing to Krashen's input hypothesis, right? Where, again, the drive is, you know, we have to understand before we can produce. And so as babies, we are, you know, soaking up all this information. If we look at it from an L1 standpoint, learning our native language, that we're just soaking up all this information before we externalize, before we communicate. But I really don't think that that's even the case, because babies, we both have kids, and I know you can relate to this, that, you know, babies are communicating from day one, whether we understand what they're saying or not, right. They are externalizing their input. They're based on whatever they're receiving as input, they're externalizing it through crying or whatever.
Yeah, gestures. And I would add to that, how much can they really grasp from whatever input you present to them, right, at that stage? I think I would go with the idea that they can have more output from themselves than whatever they can grasp in Mac. That would be like a different issue to talk about the kids, but yeah, it's a good example. But I believe there are different levels in the context, in the kind of context, and different levels, and I totally agree with you in the sense that the actual context we want to get and the meaning we want to get in class is not the one that the teacher is presenting there. It's the one that the students bring up, and not as a group. as individuals. If you remember, we already talked about this romantic idea we mentioned the idea of having this spontaneous conversation with the students by their will, and that's what I meant by having them bring their cards on the table. Now, I also believe that, yeah, teachers can have the idea of how they want to contextualize their class, but I totally agree on that. I would see it as a different level of context in the class, like we mentioned, different levels in the sense of a wide topic and a specific situation or a specific language for a specific moment. Yeah, we would also have different dimensions of profound context in it, which what we want to get is actually students bringing their own individual context in which they match the language to create learning in a way that it's endurable.
Yeah.
I
was just going to say, and from a very practical standpoint, thinking about the teaching practice, if there is a focus on input, and if there is a focus on listening and reading over writing and speaking, right? So my question then would be, how do we even assess the students? Because right. The only way we can assess any type of receptive skill is through production, whatever that production looks like, right? Whatever we want to call it. And I'll be the first to admit there's good production over bad, you know, there's a difference between good production and bad production or good practice and poor practice. But, you know, this idea of trying to focus on input over output, I think it's a fool's errand. I think I don't see it and in any practical, even a productive sense or efficiency sense.
And I would like just to bring up very quickly, I have a comment here by Alma Lucia Leyland Marin in Facebook, and she's mentioning that she writes a lot of IT systems, user guides, and she's as a trainer where she works. And she says that it's not an easy task, but it's kind of rewarding to know that the staff depends on the way she documents the information. And I can see it's kind of important for the teacher, again, to be part of this planning, to be a source of information, to be to share something with the rest of people. I would go through this idea in the sense that, yes, there will be situations in which students depend on that, or maybe not students, but users in this case. They depend on this to have a base and a starting point, but going to the idea that actually we have them maybe starting from there, but growing and being able to go beyond whatever you can present to students. That would be my opinion in that sense. Many things come to my mind when you are talking about this output-driven hypothesis, and yes, it's something that it also happens with teachers' information when we have activities and they decide to have less control activities before more control activities. And I remember some years ago, the first time that this happened, I tended to tell them, the idea that we have is to go from control to freedom, and there are theories about it. And even I remember we talked about last week, we talked about the stages in the experiential learning, and as part of the national education program. And they also have this idea of the control to freedom and leading people in that sense. But with time, I've come to see that it's not always like that. And right now in teaching worship, in fact, in last presentations, I had some examples in which students came with output activities, less control activities, in which they have students doing the things and then going backwards from what they can achieve or not. The teacher starts to scaffold and help them in different ways. And sometimes the last activity in the classroom is just the actually control specific presentation of the grammar or formula or whatever, but just as a reinforcement. And what we discuss in here is how the teacher come to this decision of putting first an output activity, a less controlled activity in which students make all the decisions and start to dare to use whatever the teacher presents. And then afterwards have a more controlled activity of substitutions or things like those. And it's interesting that sometimes they do it like not really conscious about it. And some others, they actually think, I just wanted to challenge them and see how much they knew about the topic.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point and a good approach to see, because I think a lot of times we assume students are all more or less at the same level. So how are we going to know if they're at different levels? Well, we ask them to produce something. And, you know, that's kind of on a small scale, focusing on the output-driven hypothesis on a very small scale, just to kind of maybe even as a diagnosis tool to see what level they're at. We could expand that and look more long term and think of it in terms of a performance test, thinking, okay, we want our students to be able to produce something and have smaller degrees of output that lead into, you know, kind of looking at it holistically there. But I think the notion of the input hypothesis would be that the input comes first. And I guess my question would be, look and think in just a rhetorical question, like looking at teacher training, what's the justification or how do we implement focusing only on input? And I think a lot of the conversations I've seen online takes it to the extreme. It's not even like we're talking about what we're discussing today,
right?
Just on a small scale. It's looking at some, you know, some people are suggesting that a full semester of a level one English class should be only listening and reading.
Right.
I mean, and there are a lot of people that subscribe to that notion with the idea that they don't know anything, so they have to, you know, have all this input first, and then level two, they're going to automatically now start being able to, you know, start practicing, and that would be the ideal way because that's how we learn in the L1. And that's kind of what I'm arguing against.
It's what I was mentioning that happens in Mexico, and we can see most in many classes, the students are struggling to actually speak because they are not speaking in the classroom. They are actually not speaking. If they do so, they're just answer short answers or yes and no questions, and they pretty much understand, but they are struggling with the speaking. And sometimes we have students in for example, in certain courses, let's put a number, 10 levels, and they are in level 5 and they are still not speaking.
And it's
a struggle. My point is that it's a struggle after, when you want to change it afterwards, and this I have seen in my observations with my practitioners, they struggle later to make them participate. And then they have to fight back to something that was created by themselves. They have to fight back against not speaking and not having this output. And then in their reflection, they come to the idea that, oh, I should have spent more time in output skills since the very beginning.
Well, and this is what I want everyone to think about when the input hypothesis versus the output hypothesis. Right. We can all agree that we've seen cases where students are lacking speaking skills and writing skills, right? They're not fluent. They're not able to speak. So the question is going to be one or the other. It's going to be, if you're on the input hypothesis side, you're going to say, okay, students aren't able to speak because they have not received enough input. If you're on the output side, you're going to say students aren't able to speak because they haven't had enough opportunities to speak. So that's the question I want everyone to think about. If they're on the fence of, okay, I'm on the input hypothesis side, then your answer to that question, the reason why this student can't speak is because they haven't received enough input.
Right.
Versus the
This brings me to one of the comments I have noted, and one question that we have, and I think this question is for you. Because my note was about going towards students' individual characteristics and personality, again, as the basis for input or output. Because I was thinking about, all right, what about if you ask them, if you start with this output skills and you kind of lead them toward like less control activities, but they start to get frustrated. What about the backwash effect they have when the, and what if the students cannot cope with it or the teacher does not have the ability to help them cope? This may be frustrating and may lead to students hating the language. And this was the way I would put it. But we have a question from Alma here that she says that when she writes documents, the kind of documents mentions the IT system user guides, she always thinks about the reason why she's doing this. And her question is that if that's the kind of questions the teachers have for students when they assign writing assignments, if they actually guide or tell the students or make a student wonder themselves why they're doing this. And I think this somehow brings into the table the student as the main source and their characteristics, their context, again, their purposes for writing. And I somehow thought this matched. So what about that then?
And let me know if I'm addressing the question here, if I get off base here. But I think that a couple of things come to mind. So some students are going to be more introvert versus extrovert. And it's going to depend on their personalities. You know, some are going to be more outgoing, some are going to be shyer, et cetera. So there's always this issue about how to, you know, motivate both types of students to produce, again, whether it's writing or speaking. But I think this speaks a lot to the notion of flipped learning, which we've talked about.
Okay.
With Ken Bauer a lot about this and about how we can deliver, not only deliver the course, the content, but we can also decide on how students deliver their own speaking or writing skill sets. And we can figure out ways we can give variety. And again, I'm going back to technology, and we can argue, I know some are not going to have access to technology, but the idea here is to find ways to differentiate and provide freedom of choice so that students are able to participate in different ways. Okay. And we as educators will, I know, will need to find ways to assess all of these, these different ways. But the idea is that students have different entry points. That is, they can enter into the learning experience from different perspectives and angles and be able to participate in ways that hopefully are more, purposeful for them. And I think one of the things that I always ask my teacher trainers is when you're teaching a class, always be prepared to answer the question is, well, why are we doing this, teacher, right? A student may ask, why are we doing this? So there needs to be a clear purpose in why we're doing this. And that purpose can be on a grand scale if we're looking at a performance task, or it can be a very small scale thinking, okay, we're just trying to be able to, produce this one particular grammatical structure or whatever. So we're going to do this type of activity in order to do that, and so that later we can do this. But the idea is to kind of help the students look at their learning from different perspectives,
right,
so that they can kind of identify short-term goals versus long-term goals and how to match those individual goals with classroom goals and really trying to motivate them to produce. And, you know, I've seen this in my own classes where some students really thrive and do well in certain types of activities while others don't. And it's really just trying to offer enough variety in the class, a different variety of types of language activities and different ways to participate, and really trying to reach out and know the students well enough to be able to determine and plan those types of activities. And again, I'm talking really general and abstractly here without having a very concrete example, but the idea with, I think, her question is, I think looking at it from the teaching aspect, differentiating the learning experience, and flipping the classroom using technology so that they have different ways of participating online. And I'll just conclude with a very quick example in my own class, which might help. Is, you know, I have some students that use technology, others don't. Some use their mobile device in class, some don't. But I have writing classes where I have some students and they like to participate by writing in their notebook. They don't like to have their work on the screen, which we are lucky and fortunate enough in our context to have screens in our classrooms where we can demonstrate and show other students' work to the whole group. So some students really, I feel, don't have much of a problem having their work being shown to the whole group, which I ideally like as a teacher, because I can show mistakes that one student makes and turn that into a learning moment. But other students are intimidated by that, and they don't like to have their errors shown to the whole group. So they either just show it on their own device without sharing it to the Google Doc, or they write it in their notebook. So I can accommodate all those possibilities very easily in my class. And I feel that doing that, you know, the shy students, I think, feel more comfortable because they are asking questions, whereas they might not ask questions if I only say, okay, the only way I'm going to give feedback is if I show it to the whole class and share it with everybody else.
Right. Right. Again, we are going to the individuality of students. And that was pretty much what I wanted to address, because you were mentioning you whether you lean towards the input or the output. Would I crack if I'm in the middle? The thing is that I always consider theories like something I can grasp from, knowing that many of the times, this, especially in language learning, these theories are not really developed in my context, in my Mexican context. But yeah, there are a lot of, as we have seen several times, there are a lot of things you can grasp and you can take advantage of. But I go back to the idea of having the student as the center, in the sense that their personality is going to lead towards the need of having maybe more exposure to the input, or daring to have a time trying to do things, even though they don't have all of the tools, and they can handle this constant interaction. And well, this is something that just came to my mind, and also goes towards the positive side of the output, is going to force the interaction with the teacher in order to get the necessary tools to complete these kind of projects or tasks or activities you want to develop towards focusing on the output. But on the other side, there are students which may have a hard time on this kind of interaction with the teacher. In fact, what I was going to discuss today, that I think I can leave it for next week. I wanted to talk about some ideas in reference to demands and supports for students and the different types of demands. And some of the students, the interactional demand, the affective demand that the tasks imply, may be blocking even the development of the linguistic demand of the language itself. So I here again go towards the idea of knowing your students. You have to know your students in order to determine what is going to happen in the classroom when you do certain things.
And you mentioned, and I totally agree. I mean, we do need to try to know our students as much as possible. I take that another level, though. Knowing our students, I mean, I think is certainly we want to know our students, but I would also admit myself that there's a lot of things I know, there's a lot of things I don't know about my students. And so another way to look at it might be to say, okay, I'm never going to know my students well enough to get inside their head, right, and know exactly what type of activity is going to drive each student at every single moment. That's never going to happen. So maybe I just try to offer enough variety and potentiality in my classroom, so with the hopes that students respond, and they give me some indication based on their response that what I'm doing either is working or not. And it, looking at it more in a complex scenario where it's just about potentiality, it's more like, okay, here's the environment that I'm going to try to create. Now go create, type of thing. And we're trying to just give them those opportunities. And again, it goes back to flipped learning too, because I can say, okay, you can either go here and work, you can either go here and work, or you can go here and work, and you can share this way or share this way, or you can receive feedback this way. Or, and because a lot of students, I always give my students options of receiving feedback from me, either through email, of course, in class, or in my office, whatever. That's a very simple example, but the idea is saying, okay, you choose, right? How do you want to, you know, how, and sometimes I'll even tell my students, how much feedback do you want to receive from me? Again, in my case, it's writing, because most of my classes deal with writing. So I know from experience that some students do not like a lot of feedback. Mm-hmm. I have other students that will ask me every single day, can you give me more feedback, more feedback, more feedback, more feedback? Feedback. They thrive on that. Yeah. So for me, just that one instance of how much feedback do I give each student? I have no idea. I say, all right, you tell me. All right. I'm going to give everybody feedback, of course. Right. But I'm going to say, okay, if you want more feedback from me, do this. In fact, in some students, I'll say, do you want less feedback? Is this too much? I usually can tell right away if it's too much feedback, but it's really trying to be in tune of, in this case, how much feedback, how much information, how many comments should I leave on their documents so that I don't demotivate them, right? By giving them too much and make sure that they're motivated enough if they want more feedback.
So. And those are the parts where you have to know your students, because maybe I need to be clear in the idea that my thought is not that you know your students to tell them what they should do or what they need. Or you as a teacher saying, I know you so well that I know you have to do it this way, or you have to do this in order to learn or that. No, it's not the idea of knowing students. That would be the idea of understanding what can help your students to make their own decisions. Like knowing your students to know what can bring them confidence, as you were mentioning, as to share their writings or accept or diminish the filters when getting the feedback.
But my point here, though, Petey, is those decisions that I would make exactly the same decisions whether I knew nothing about my students or that I knew a lot about them. It's exactly the same. My point, the extreme would be like, I don't even need to know my students. Why? Because all I need to do is give them choices. And right. Choices, okay, maybe I come to know some about them, but I'm still not going to know them well enough to know.
What kind of choices would they be? Maybe they would be, I don't know if that would be the idea, to have different choices from different perspectives and profiles that you previously conceived in order to hopefully have students matching towards one or two of these different choices, right?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm not going to know if they're going to want to prefer to write in Google Doc throughout the week or maybe just upload it at the end of the week or to write in a notebook. I'm not going to know. And that could even change over the course of a semester. They could change on the amount of feedback that they want from me over the course of a unit. They may want a lot of feedback at the beginning and not so much at the end, or vice versa, or anything in between. And that is just, I'll never know. I'll never know all of that. And no. It doesn't bother me, because I'm just telling them, these are different ways that you can interact and participate in this class. And within these
these ways you mentioned will come obviously from different ideas, different approaches, different formats, different paths that they can take that you previously or somebody along the line identify, you know, not because we want to match students there, but we, as you mentioned, we want to give them options. And maybe at the end, they're going to come up with something out of the box and find a different path from whichever option we present. And I understand in that sense, in knowing your students, right? You may not need to know them as long as you understand the variety that you can offer people in general.
Yeah, and I think we're saying the same thing. I think that what I've seen is going back to our discussion we had, I think last week or 2 weeks ago, about learning styles.
Right. Oh, yeah.
We didn't get into it a lot, but this idea of, and I've seen this, this is not related so much to our conversations, but I've seen that, you know, some research, some student thesis, not from this year, but prior years, this focus on learning styles and the importance of trying to learn what those learning styles are from the students as a basis for designing a class. And that's kind of what I'm like, well, if so, is that what it means to know the student, to know kind of abstractly what their learning styles are? And then this is kind of my...
Yeah, I totally get it in that sense. And that's why I mentioned, like, it's not knowing them to tell them what this is what you need or this is what... Yeah, because in that sense, you would be even labeling students for good. And everything you would do would go towards one thing. And maybe the student, and I agree on that too, that maybe the student at certain situations, he is not doing the same thing he tends to do regularly or the way he tends to do it, or along the line changes, or there's a moment of transformation. There's the famous click we always mention about, and we teachers enforce the blocking of this this development from students. I agree on that, and I think this open idea has given us a different perspective in the sense that what we can see now in the classrooms when we have a teacher with the traditional idea, and this is something I struggle with fresh teachers, pre-service teachers, they have the traditional idea that a class is coming into the class to put out some information for everybody from me, the way I plan it and I interpret it and I understand it, whether I know well the topic or maybe I don't know the topic, but this is my exhibition of the topic. And then just ask students, do you have any question? Which the regular answer is no. And then say, all right, now you are going to do this. Do it.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
And options are totally close.
That's the kiss of death question. Does everybody understand? All right, are there any questions? I mean, that's
any question? No.
you can never win from that that question.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, and we all do it, of course, right? But it's one of those things that's
beyond the no answer, when they actually answer with a yes, there's a question. The question is, oh, teacher, so you show us these two sentences. So do I use the first one or the second one?
Right.
I mean, again, towards the leading about whatever the teacher is intending. And yes, I think we can find a point in between, because there will be times in which the student may feel that need of a little bit more of security and control by the teacher. And I always talk about controlling the class with my students, but yes, in a deeper level, it is not about controlling what the students will actually do with the language in total. But as you mentioned, having this variety, that's what I focus on, the knowing your students in order to provide confidence. Maybe some language patterns, different ways to be presented, just that the student know that there are different options to follow, and he can try their own, and maybe also as knowing your students as to know which context at different level may intrigue the student and make it go deeper into the practice of the day. That's And I think that's the kind of sense in which the knowing our students will help us to at least, because maybe I know they like this kind of music, and that day they are not into the mood for music. So
it's, yeah, I mean, it's a matter of either knowing them or just knowing the situation. Like, do we know that what they're doing at that point is what they need to be doing, right? I mean, as teachers, that's one thing we need to know is,
okay,
are they doing the things that we want them to do? And we need to be have enough knowledge and skills to be able to say, okay, they are doing what they should be doing, like that we can recognize that as an educative experience, or we can recognize that as a non-educative experience. And I think that, you know, whether we know, quote unquote, know the students or not, our job is to be able to have that skill and knowledge base that we can say, yes, this is working, or no, this is not working, and then make adjustments, whether in real time or in subsequent classes. And I think in a teacher program, teacher training program, and just in service teachers, as we are reflecting on our own practice and trying to prove that we are becoming more aware of that and making decisions like your topic today of adapting, which, yeah, I hope we can talk more about that either today or in the future, but how we can, you know, both in the moment adapt and provide that support versus, and also plan for it in the future, saying, okay, there was some issues here. How can we provide support or adapt maybe the flipped learning experience in a way that offers additional support for students who are struggling, that are maybe more introvert or whatever, and are accommodating those types of situations?
Right. Very, very interesting topic today, Ben. I think I enjoy listening to this article and the idea of the output-driven hypothesis. Pretty much it matches a lot of the things I've been seeing. I've been learning from my students, actually, more than enforcing, because I know I tend to do things that match this output-driven hypothesis. But more than doing, I do them because I see them from themselves, and I see they work, and I see how they actually do it. Right now, when students are really into the teachers, pre-service teachers, when they are really into planning and into the idea of actually achieving something with the students, they come with pretty good ideas by themselves. They sometimes they don't even have the theoretical background for it, but they come with things that are really effective and that changes. When I see it from a different perspective, maybe a little bit more of experience and having seen different activities and comparing to the ones they bring sometimes nowadays, I can see all of these changes. And that's what I say. It matches totally what I've been learning from my students and how I present now to them different options from what I saw before with other students.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that is the key, is providing options, you know, providing the buffet, right? And they choose which foods that they want to eat. Right. So yeah, definitely. I know we're getting kind of towards the end of it. I want to give a quick shout out to everyone. I know, as I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, that we're concluding this semester, and in fact, the year for some students. We're having some recent students who are in the eighth semester of our English language training program at the Universidad Autónoma de Aguascalientes. They're finishing their thesis research. And I want to invite anyone who's doing research. We haven't really extended a specific invitation of this type before, but if you're doing research, if you've conducted research and you want to share that, whether you're a recent or soon to be graduate or in-service teacher, we'd love to have you on to talk about your research. If it's related to education in any way, that's, we're always looking for topics to talk about. So if you want to share your research with us, we certainly extend that invitation. Just let us know. I think the easiest way would be to leave a message or a comment in our Facebook page, English Teacher Learning Cast, and let us know if you'd like to share your experiences with us. And we're always looking for people to join us in the broadcast. Give us some feedback. Let us know what your thoughts are. Even if you disagree with us, it's all good. Let us know what your ideas are. And you know, this week focusing mainly on output-driven hypothesis and the writing skill in particular. Let us know what your thoughts are, how you approach writing in your own English context. And would certainly love to learn more about how you are dealing with that. And yeah, Petey, I think this we're pretty much going to conclude today's broadcast. Any closing thoughts?
Well, just thanking all people that joins through the transmission, the different media, to Claudia, Rocio, Annie, Flor, to Alma Zaragoza just joined us, and people that passed by, Daniel, Randy, and some others that passed by. Today we had a couple of interventions also by Alma Lucia. Thank you very much about that. That's what we want. We want just to put things on the table from our perspective, which is exclusively art, and it's shared, so you can take whatever you like, and you can make comments on that, and you can ask questions, and you can ask about, tell us what you want to hear about, if you want us to invite somebody, or if you want to come or join through the Hangout, we can do it, and I'm really glad they're spreading the word, and they're sharing the video. I would encourage you guys, the ones that are sharing the video in Facebook Live, go to the source. The source has a better view and a way, a lot better sound. Benjamin is seen in first plane, and myself too, and the audio is way better. And when we share screens and the articles, they are readable, which are not when we are here and when you are just looking in the Facebook Live. And I think we will start to think about how to evolve this a little bit, because I see you are taking Facebook as a way of a more dynamic way of sharing and making comments. But I'm also monitoring at the same time the YouTube transmission, the original source, and my personal webpage transmission, just in case, and the Teacher Learning Cast page. Just in case you have comments and you post things there, we have the chats open there too, okay? So the transmission I'm making in Facebook Live, it's a secondary transmission with a worse view of it, but it's just for you to know that there's an original source in which you can make comments and we can also interact just as we are doing right now. Thank you, Ben. I was really glad. I liked the topic a lot, so that's why I let it run and kept on that. And I think we will need to come back to it somewhere in the future, at some point in the future.
Absolutely, Petey. I always enjoy these conversations, and I want to thank everybody for watching the live broadcast as well as the recording. And I think we'll stop. And we'll conclude today's broadcast there. Thanks again, everyone. Thanks, Petey. And we'll see you in the next broadcast.
See you next broadcast. Alma, we'll be glad to receive the documents you want to send us just as examples and have a talk about it. We'll let you know through inbox. You can send it to me or Benjamin in our Facebook pages through inbox, and we'll let you know the day we may take and go over the analysis or whatever we can do with it to share with people. Thank you very much, everybody. Keep on learning.